Welcome to the Quest for Quality podcast with keynote speaker Joe Higgins.
In terms of Quest for Quality, this is really about living a quality life, having a quality career. If you always aim for quality in your life, you will almost always find success at some point in the longer term.
For decades, Joe has shared his quest for quality message with thousands of business professionals across the country.
Some of you may know our keynote speaker. I would tell you he's a legend in the industry, and it's great to see him back with us.
I've had the privilege and honor introducing some very famous speakers to you. They were all great speakers and showed you how a winning attitude brings success. But our next speaker is even better. Joe Higgins has walked in our shoes. Joe's the only speaker in our history that we've invited to talk to us 2 years in a row.
The Quest for Quality podcast presents a universal message under the umbrella of four areas of Joe's unprecedented experience and expertise. Leadership. Building healthy teams. Customer service. Understanding the American economy.
I'm trying to let people get that message that it's taken me, 40 years to learn. I've had a lot of experience. I've gone through major levels of an organization. I've trained and worked with and supervised thousands of people over my career and created leaders at the Whirlpool Corporation today that are running the company. So hopefully what I bring here in this thing is allowing people to live a better life and a better quality of life.
Welcome to another edition of the Quest for Quality with Joe podcast. I'm Tim Edwards with the Inbound Podcasting Network, joined as always with keynote speaker and the founder of Quest for Quality, Joe Higgins. Joe, glad to have you back this time here in our brand new Inbound Podcasting studio.
Well, thanks, Tim. Hey, this is really fantastic. You've done a nice job with your studio. I'm glad to be here.
Well, Joe, you've been busy since we recorded our last episode titled America, We the People. Tell us what you've been up to since then.
Well, you know, it's been a really busy 3 or 4 months now. We got through Thanksgiving, Christmas, and now into the new year. It's hard to believe it's gone this fast. But we've been back and forth to our home in Washington. I live in Southern California part of the year and in the Washington area, Camas, Washington, mostly in the summertime.
Just gorgeous up there, too, all the photos that you've sent me.
Oh, my gosh. Mm. Yeah, we love it up there. It is fantastic. And looking forward to spending summers there. But I've had a number of different presentations. I worked in Pittsburgh recently, had a really fantastic time at a place called Don's Appliance and TV, I think a 7-store chain in the Pittsburgh area. And they had all their people in for a full day seminar, and I was able to talk about culture there. I also did a presentation recently in Florida, in Tampa, Florida, for a company, an 11-store chain in Tampa, Florida. So I've kind of been all over the country, from east to west and in between. So it's been fun so far.
Well, Florida loves you. I know that's where you're headed this weekend. At the time of this recording, which is at the end of February 2017, you're preparing for another trip to Orlando this time. And you've been to Orlando with the same convention for several years.
Yeah, actually, this is where my career started about six years ago now. Brand Source in Orlando, they call it the Summit. Mm-hmm. And I'll be there this year talking to a group. It's a group of about 5,000 independent dealers. Lots of people will be there, and I'll be speaking in the seminar rooms talking about culture. So it's going to be a fun week for me while I'm there.
Well, this episode is going to include some of the key points of that presentation that you're going to make here about a week
That's right.
That's right. Yeah. And so we'd like to welcome maybe some new subscribers to the podcast here that heard your presentation, that heard about your podcast, and they'll be able to use the information that we record here today to kind of reinforce what you showed them in Orlando.
Right. Great. And I think that's really important. I think sometimes you hear something, it takes a while to absorb it. And once they hear it once or twice, three times, then you really start to get an impression of what it's about and why it's important.
No question about it. And I do that all the time with the previous podcast episodes that we've had. And one of them that we recorded several months ago was on creating and building a high-performance culture, which is the main topic of what we're talking about today. But your presentations, they evolve through time with new information.
They do. I constantly update them. Sometimes I update them hours before I walk out on stage, so that's not unusual. I always get a hard time from the people at the conventions because they want the stuff ahead of time. But I like to wait and see what I learn each and every day that I can put into my presentation.
Well, especially with your presentations on the economy, because that is in a constant state of flux.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, especially these days.
Yeah, I know, which we will talk about in upcoming episodes.
That's right.
Here in the not too distant future.
Yeah.
Well, again, like I mentioned, today we're going to talk about building a high-performance culture within an organization. Now, Joe, throughout your career, you were primarily engaged in the retail industry with your time with Whirlpool. Is your presentation solely designed for those in the retail industry, or do you believe that this information is generic in nature and can be applied to
any industry or organization?
No, it can be applied anywhere. And I've actually done this for a number of different organizations. You know, my career really was both wholesale and retail. You know, Whirlpool Corporation is a manufacturing company. And in 2006, when we acquired the Maytag organization, it was my job because I had the U.S. sales along with the national accounts, the key accounts, the independent retail. I even had the builder side, the National Builders Organization at Whirlpool. And it was my job to integrate the Whirlpool culture and the Maytag culture at the same time. So I spent almost two years. That's where I really came up to become somewhat of an expert in this area, was the work I did in bringing two giant corporations together. And that was really an amazing work.
What a monumental task, giant organizations with, I'm sure, very different cultures, and you had to find a way to meld them together without a lot of pushback.
That's what it was. And so that's where this all began, with the culture part of it. And that's where I learned the information that I usually talk about at seminars and stuff. But every presentation I do is customized. Mm-hmm. If I'm speaking in front of a group and I've worked with them around vision statements and mission statements, values and culture, things like that, I customize the presentation for that organization, like I did a couple of weeks ago in Pittsburgh, and before that in Tampa, Florida, and this week in Orlando. Each presentation is different.
So you have a basic template of the content that you're going to cover, but then you take what their situation might be and integrate it into your
presentation. Right, because every organization is different. I mean, mm-hmm. we all have different values and different beliefs, and it's my job to find out what those are, put them together, and help to create the behavior in an organization.
Let's go through the process, if you don't mind, for just a minute. When you prepare to speak to an organization or at a convention, what type of prep work do you do to customize these presentations? Who do you speak to? What type of questions do you ask so that you get the right information?
Well, let's start from the beginning. If I'm hired on to do vision and mission, what we begin with really is sitting down with a leadership team and saying, what are your values? What do you believe in? What do you want to practice? What do you want to reward? What are your aspirations in this organization? Mm-hmm. And I sit down for a half a day, a full day sometimes, depending on the size of the company. And we pull that out of the head of the CEO or the leadership team, because a lot of times in organizations, that information sits in somebody's brain mm-hmm. and flows out in an organization, and people have to guess what they're thinking about. And I always say, why not make it explicit? Why not figure out exactly what you want to say to your people, to your customers, and then put it down in a document, in a vision statement, put it down in a document, in a mission statement that describes how you're supposed to act in an organization. And once you do that, then it can be customized to the values that people have. So if you believe strongly, for example, in customer service or integrity or accountability, then that's what I present and that's what I create and talk about in the speeches that I give to these organizations.
So you were really working with organizations with a blank slate if they didn't have a mission statement already prepared.
Well, yeah, and most of them don't. I mean, you think about it, probably 90% of all organizations do not have any kind of a vision or mission statement. It's pretty rare. Now, the Fortune 500s typically do, mm-hmm. but you can even find within that or those organizations people that don't sit down and say, hey, this is who we are as an organization. The great ones do when you think about companies like Disneyland. I know you're a big Disneyland fan.
We are Disney fans at the house.
They're very specific on their culture. You know, they tell you, like, if you go to work for Disney, you're not called an employee, you're called a cast member. Mm-hmm. If you go to work there, if you go to the park and a customer, you're not called a customer, you're called a guest. They're very explicit about that. They send their people to cultural training school. And that's kind of the function that I play in organizations, is to teach them exactly how to do this, because in and of itself, culture and vision statements and mission statements aren't that important. What's important is how you reinforce the message, you know, every month, every 6 months, every year, or whatever, saying this is who we are as an organization and this is how we should act.
So not just for people that are new to an organization or new hires, this is something that you believe should be reinforced on a very regular basis to those employees that have been with the company or the organization for quite some time.
Absolutely. In Whirlpool, you know, Whirlpool is a multinational global corporation, and I ran U.S. sales. But within my organization, Whirlpool had its own vision and mission statement, but I had my own vision and mission statement in my organization that was different but tied into Whirlpool, because my organization was a sales organization. So I was interested in things like how well my salespeople call on dealers, how knowledgeable they were, what they bring to the game every day. Those are the kind of things that I wanted my people to have that was different from the Whirlpool vision. So I think that even in organizations within organizations, you can have, you know, different vision and mission statements that tie what you do in a company to the larger vision of that organization.
As long as the brand and the overall culture is protected.
Absolutely, yeah.
So let's jump back to the beginning, Joe, of what you're going to present this weekend coming up in Orlando, and what you always present when you talk about culture. We've discussed this in previous podcasts, but how about a little refresher course? Let's start with the definition of culture. When I think culture growing up, we think of various regions, right? And cultures within communities and within countries. But culture, there are various subsets within organizations like you just mentioned a moment ago in various departments. Define culture.
Well, first of all, let's start, Tim, with every organization has a culture. Mm-hmm. Everywhere you go. I mean, if you go down the street to Starbucks, as we had breakfast there a couple of months ago.
That's right.
If you fly on an airline, if you go into every church has a culture, every grocery store has a culture.
Every family has a culture.
Every family has a culture. Mm-hmm. And you know, families have different values. I mean, you and I might sit here today, and we might have a lot in common. And we have great number of commonalities, but we have different values. And they might, you know, they might be any number of things. Mm-hmm. I always say things like a family, for example. There are people that really value family. There are people that value entertaining their friends. Maybe it's built around food or wine, something like that. Maybe mm-hmm. it's travel. But we all have these different values. And that's where you have to find out what it is that you believe in. And that's what helps to define your culture. But the definition of culture, I think simply put, it's an integrated pattern of human behavior. Integrated meaning that it's consistent across an organization or a race of people or a community of people. It's consistent. It also means you have shared values, that within that culture, you share the values of the culture. And then we say things like that in that culture, there are people that want to achieve the same things in an organization. So you share the values and you want to achieve the aspirations that the CEO or the president or whatever have of that organization. Culture equals behavior. You can see how people behave in a culture, and that means that equals your survival of an organization. If you get your people behaving in a way that is consistent with your values, then typically your organization is going to thrive and survive over the longer term.
So let's net it down to the family, right? So in a family environment, the parents are the leaders of that organization.
That's right.
They set the tone for the culture, for the expected behaviors, for everything that you just mentioned. So in an organization or in a company, those that are at the top of the org chart are the ones, I would assume, are who set the culture.
Let's go back to the family first, okay? Mm-hmm. So if it's a family, let's use my case as a good example. When I met my wife 16 years ago, she had a 4-year-old daughter. We value education, I'm sure like you do, like most people do. But we started telling her at 4 years old that she was going to go to college. It wasn't a matter of if she was going to go, it was a matter of where she was going to go. Mm-hmm. And so what we would do on vacation, if we were near a college somewhere, we would stop and give her a tour and tell her what her life might be like on a college campus. Those were our values. That's what we believed in. And so 16 years later, I'm proud to say this, she's a junior, soon to be a senior at the University of California at Riverside studying engineering.
Wow.
And the point is that culture has outcomes. That's why we do it. That's why we practice it. So we practice a behavior. We have some expectations, and the outcome are that she's going to graduate probably within the next year or so. And that's what we expected, and that's what you get. But in an organization, see, you can dictate it because you're paying people to come into your organization.
Right.
You know, with children, it doesn't always happen that way. We were lucky in that sense, but it's good that it happened.
Well, I like what you said there when you said that within an organization, the organization is paying somebody to come in to maintain that culture. So it's a little bit different from a family.
Absolutely, yeah, no doubt.
Well, but at the same time, you know, as parents, there are expectations, and there are punishments
for not
maintaining what a family or organization believes or based upon their values. So it does certainly translate into a professional environment.
Well, and a couple more things, though, when you think about, again, the definition of culture and where we were going with that. You know, culture also needs to evolve. And cultures that stagnate usually don't do very well. As culture evolves, and they evolve with the demographics of society, mm-hmm. with the mores of society, and they evolve with generations. You know, years ago, Tim, when I was with Whirlpool, I spoke at, you know, a lot of different events, and everywhere I would go, there was boomers in the audience, baby boomers in the audience. Every audience was full of baby boomers. Mm-hmm. But today, when I'm out speaking, there are now Gen X and Gen Y and millennials, and they're all very different. And that generation brings a whole new look to a culture, and it changes it in positive ways. It helps it to evolve. If you have a business climate where you're living in the, you know, 1970s, you're not long for this world. I like organizations where they have generations that come in, bring new ideas, and they help to change the organization. And then one last thing about culture. Culture dictates that if you get a team that can work together, that organizes and works together, share values, that you can really accomplish just about anything. And we see that across organizations in America today. And it's really pretty enlightening.
And Joe, let's go back to what you said a minute ago about cultures that don't evolve, that are antiquated and stale and stagnant. Can you give us some examples without us getting sued of some, well, some cultures that, don't evolve?
I can. One of the ones I always use is Harley-Davidson. Harley-Davidson's a culture that, you know, for years they came up with the hardscrabble folks that bought their bikes, you know, the Hells Angels and the Bandidos and the Outlaws.
Right.
That's who they identified with. At Harley during those periods, it was the, as I read, you know, the articles that I've read, it was the tough guys that made the decisions at Harley. It was the intimidators that got the promotions. And in Harley, you know, they had these famous problems. One of them I always remember was this famous leak that they had. They had a horrible culture in that nobody really took accountability for anything. And they had this famous leak where every motorcycle you bought leaked oil on the garage floor after about 300 miles. And if you called Harley and you said, "Hey, I have a problem with my bike, it's leaking oil," the guy'd say, "Leaking oil?" He'd say, "They're all leak oil. What are you talking about?" Mm-hmm. You know, that's what was their attitude. That was in the early 70s. They were like a 60% share player. They went, 6 out of every 10 large motorcycles were Harley-Davidson's.
Wow.
Well, the generations changed. The baby boomers started coming in and buying their bikes, and they didn't like dealing with tough guys.
Or leaks on their garage floor.
And Yamaha and Honda came in, and that changed the game. So people started buying their bikes. And Harley went from being a 60% share player to being a 17% share player. So less than 2 out of 10 were buying their bikes.
Mm.
So a company came in and bought them out. An organization came in and bought them out. And they said, "We're no longer the old Harley. We have to change and evolve." And they put in a new mission statement that said that, this is off the top of my head, but they said that from now on, we're going to be fair. We're going to keep our promises. If you have a year warranty, we're going to fix your bike in warranty. They said, "We're going to respect the individual. No longer does a tough guy make the decisions anymore." And they said the last one was, "We're going to keep our promises." And Harley today is now a 56% share player. So they've got almost all their share back, and their business is great. So it was a culture that stagnated, was doing everything the old ways and didn't change. They almost went into bankruptcy.
And look what they had to do, though. They had to be purchased by someone else for that to happen.
Absolutely.
And so I know the organizations do everything they can for that not to be the case.
That's right.
So how does an organization keep their finger on the pulse of the changes that are going on? Is it just bringing up youthful people within their organization, hiring new people with new ideas?
Well, you know, that's a great question. And I'm not sure I have a really great answer for that. Except that, let me give you an example of that. When General Motors recently, they had 100 deaths that occurred as a result of an ignition switch problem that they had in their corporation. Do you remember that?
I do.
And what happened at GM was they were so internally focused, they hid it from everybody. They didn't want anybody to know about it. And people were dying as this was happening. They were sued, obviously, $900 million. Let's call it $1 billion is what this issue cost them. They weren't really living up to any levels of integrity that they had. They brought in Mary Barra, the new CEO, and she changed the mission statement. And now it includes the word safety, and it includes the words, "We win when the customer says we win." They look outside now at the customer. The way you continually keep an organization on track is to continually update and look at your culture, your vision, your mission, your values, things like that, and update them as you go along, because everybody's going to have a downside. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's always going to be a part in a business where you're not going to be 100% successful.
Well, that's how they grow, though, too, right? Is to recognize what the downside is and fix it.
And I tell organizations, look at your vision every year. Sit down in November and December and say, "Hey, are we on track? Is there something we want to add? Is there something different or new about our organization today?" Like I told you about when we acquired Maytag at Whirlpool, it was a complete change in an organization. We had to put together a whole new look at what we wanted to achieve over the longer term. And I think that's what organizations can do. I said this earlier. It's not so much having a vision, a mission statement. It is reinforcing your values every year. Like I said, with the Disneyland, what Disneyland does, they send their people to cultural training school. You reinforce and get people to believe in what it is that you believe in. Share those values. And that's how you win in the longer term with culture.
Well, let's take a couple steps down the ladder in the org chart, as it were, and focus on the employees that are new to an organization, or maybe even some employees that have been there for a while and already accustomed and used to a certain way of doing things. What are some of the things that employees can do to, you know, start from the bottom up to make a positive shift or change in one's organization's culture?
Well, there's a lot of things that people can do. I usually try to focus in on a few of them that I think are really important. The first thing I'd say is when you're in an organization, one of the things that makes an organization successful is coming into work every day with a great attitude, positive mental attitude, being upbeat, like we said about Disneyland, where people understand that their job is to entertain their guests. When you're working in a company, it's always your customers that are so important to you that really give you the viability to stay in business over the longer term. And I say, come in every day, be positive, be upbeat, go out of your way to smile at people and say hello. You know what a difference that makes? Like when you're in a restaurant and you have a really positive waiter or waitress come up to you, what the impact that has on you versus somebody that's in a negative mood. Same way if you go to Home Depot or Lowe's and you get somebody that's willing to help you out and go out of their way to find something or, you know, fill the needs that you have. That's always a big deal. I think that's probably one of the most important things that we do. Another thing is being a great teammate. You know, working across a team, coming in every day and doing your job well, helping somebody else if they're new in the organization, like you were saying, somebody that's been there for a while, helping somebody understand the culture, what they need to do to survive in it, and what they need to do to prosper in it as well, to be a really good employee.
And as you mentioned teammates, I'd like to know your thoughts on creating a competitive environment amongst your employees, not you, but like for an organizational leader. Is it healthy to create a competitive environment and culture amongst those members of the organization? I know that that's a default for a lot of people because they feel they're going to get the most out of their employees that way. Or do you think it's unhealthy to create a competitive environment, to be a good teammate?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of schools of thought here. But I think in terms of a teammate, what you want is teams that are working together, not teams that are, facing off and trying to get ahead of somebody else. I never try to foster that in my organization. So I'm not a big believer in creating tension and issues in a corporation where you're competing against each other. I think it's fine in a sales team for people to understand that you have individuals that are doing better in terms of their sales, maybe beating quota, things like that, knowing where you stand in a group of people in terms of your performance levels. I think that's good, but you can find that out in a performance review versus it being public and put out in a document that says that, hey, so-and-so is doing so much better than someone else. You need to compete in an organization like that. But that's where I've always been with my organizations. I think where you want to be competitive is with your competitors. You know, if you have people out there that you're fighting against, then you want to go in that direction. But I will say, because it's a really interesting question, what I will say about it is that every organization has their all-stars. Mm-hmm. Every organization has really high performers. And what you want in an organization is your lower performers to understand what it takes to be a upper level performer. Just like you have all stars in a basketball, the NBA, for example, you have all stars and you have the other players that say, if I want to be great, what do I need to do to achieve in an organization? How much practice do I have to put in? How much time do I have to get on the court every day? What kind of shape do I have to be in? Those are the kind of things I think that you want to see, where you have an organization that can look out and say, these are the requirements, these are the characteristics that make a great employee. What do I need to do to get there? And that for me is where you would have competition.
So we're talking about how employees can help maintain the culture that's expected within an organization. You talked about having great customer service, being a good teammate. What else?
Well, I think a big one's integrity. There's an old saying that if you have integrity, nothing else matters. And if you don't have integrity, nothing else matters.
It's like your health, right?
That's right. Yeah, absolutely. Great organizations are great because they're honest and customers trust them and they've been there. You know, if you go in an organization, they've been in business for 50 years. They've been in business because they've delivered great products, great customer service, but they've been honest for 50 years with their customers and people recognize that. If you want to go out of business right away, look at what Volkswagen did. I mean, here was a great company driving to be the number one car company in the world, and they were putting defeat devices on their cars to make them look like they were really clean in test mode, but polluting at 60% higher levels in when they were driving them. Volkswagen was fined $23 billion by the U.S. alone. They think the fines could be as much as $100 billion.
How can they even survive?
Exactly. And you think, where was the integrity in an organization like that? I mean, Martin Winterkorn, their CEO, he was forcing their people almost in an autocratic way to do whatever it took to sell cars and never once said, what impact does this have on people that buy our cars, the environment that we're going to create when we're polluting the levels we are at. Never once did that. And this was initially, a lot of people thought this could put Volkswagen out of business. A lack of integrity is just about the worst thing you can do in business. You know, at Whirlpool, they taught us this was, if you can ask anybody at Whirlpool this, what's the saying at Whirlpool about integrity? And people always tell you, this is it. There's no right way to do a wrong thing. Mm. We drilled that into every employee. And even today, after being gone for 5 years, almost 6 years now at Whirlpool, if I ask somebody that, they still say that. That's how critical integrity is. So that's a huge one.
Well, you're talking about integrity and following those lines. I would imagine holding somebody accountable within their organization to maintain the culture that has been impressed upon them, like you just mentioned, yeah. Whirlpool. Where does accountability factor into this?
Well, you know, in an organization, when you find an organization where people don't take accountability, it's really frustrating. You've been that where you've made a phone call and someone says, well, that's not my job. Let me transfer you to somebody else. And they send it to somebody else. In organizations, people need to be accountable in any job you have. If you're working in the field, and let's say you're delivering a product, and there's an issue with the product, you don't just leave the customer and say, "Well, you know, that's somebody else's issue." If you're a good organization and you're out there delivering, let's say at Whirlpool, and you're delivering refrigerators, and there's a problem, what you do is you get on the line and you call the service department and you say, "Ma'am, I have a service call set up for you. They'll be out here in 24 hours to fix your refrigerator." That's the kind of accountability you want in organizations. That's huge in terms of culture. Great cultures do that. They have people that will work across the aisle to bring accountability, that will bring then resolution for customers with issues that they have.
So a great culture brings about great outcomes, as you said that earlier.
There's, absolutely. Yeah.
Conversely, cultures that have not been maintained or cultivated, I imagine, could get out of control. Any examples of that we can look to, you know, you can learn as much from a bad example as you can a good example.
Yeah. Yeah. No, there, you know, I can give you a lot of different examples of it. I think a good example of accountability is the Ritz-Carlton. I was there one time having dinner, and I always have trouble with menus. And the guy saw that, and he brought the chef out. And the chef said, well, I understand you're having trouble with our menu. What can I help you with? And I said, well, you know, if you can take this off of this part of the menu. And he goes, no. He goes, just tell me what you want to eat. So I said, okay. And I told him. And he came back with probably the finest travel meal I'd ever had. Mm. It was amazing, really. Here was a culture that if you look on their website, they say, we go out of our way to bring great results to our customers. But they also say, we pull out the unexpressed wishes of our How do they say that? The unexpressed wishes, yeah, of our guests.
Well, how do they do that? The unexpressed wishes.
I was sitting there not telling them what I wanted.
How would you know?
He came out, he pulled it out of me, yeah. And the Ritz-Carlton gave me the finest travel meal I'd ever had. And when I think of great cultures, it's cultures that really look for ways to give a customer what they really want, what they are there that they don't really know how to express. But they kind of pull it out of you, and that's what the Ritz-Carlton did for me. It was an amazing story, I think, in my mind. But you know, there are winners and losers in cultures, and you can see it just about anywhere you go. And even within companies that have great cultures, have you ever been into a store that is well known, like a hardware store in town that has a maybe orange coloring around it? That's great. You've had great experiences and bad experiences. I was in one of those stores recently. And I had the most negative person when I was trying to buy paint, the most negative person helping me. And it gave me a sour taste for the entire organization.
Of course.
Great organizations have great attitudes and they manage their culture across every job in the corporation. Doesn't matter where it's at. You can't go into a company and have a great cashier but have a really poor salesperson or a great delivery person and a bad service person. It has to be consistent. Remember, integrated pattern of human behavior? It has to be consistent across an organization to be a great organization. And sometimes we forget that and sometimes we miss that.
So, Joe, you've been speaking about building and maintaining high-performance cultures for years to various organizations. Is there an organization too small for you to come out and visit? I mean, I know that you do a lot of convention keynote speaking, but give us some examples of some maybe mom and pop stores with small chains that might want to have you come out and speak to them, to their employees.
Yeah, I did in November of last year, I did a presentation for a company up in San Luis Obispo, 85 people, total organization, help them with their vision and mission statements. And then we put on a full company meeting where they brought in all their employees. And I spoke at that event. So I can do that small and all the way up to 5,000 people, 10,000 people. It doesn't matter.
All right. So if you're interested in contacting Joe Higgins to speak to your organization or an upcoming convention regarding building high performance cultures, or Joe can cover some of the other topics he has, such as the current state and future of the American economy. That's a big one right now. Building healthy teams, customer service, and even leadership. Just click on over to www.q4qwithjoe.com. Hit the Request Joe button, fill out the form, and Joe will get right back with you. And maybe you have a question or a comment for Joe. We sure would love to hear from you. You can record a voice memo on your phone and send it to tim@inboundpodcasting.com, or pick up the phone, do it the old-fashioned way, and leave us a message at 888-983-5020, extension 2. We'll record your voicemail and play it back on an upcoming episode, and all feedback is welcome. Thanks again for listening in, and we'll catch you next time for another edition of the Quest for Quality with Joe podcast. For Joe Higgins, I'm Tim Edwards with the Inbound Podcasting Network.